Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Wednesday, the 13th of July, recording at 9:15 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. Asian stock markets were mostly firmer. So were the European stock markets, so were the Americas, although Wall Street's gains were pegged back quite a bit towards the close. Ended up about 0.33% for the S&P and the Dow, 0.5% for the NASDAQ composite. Elsewhere, long-dated government bond prices, they weakened pretty well across the boards until later in the day, and then they turned those right around and rallied in the USA, at any rate, Europe's. Bond prices, long-dated government bond prices were lower, but the U.S. 30-year, that was almost a point down and is half a point higher right now. Now, the U.S. dollar was sharply weaker, Bernanke's comments having something to do with that. The euro, for instance, pushed back up to 141.43. The Australian dollar, 107.41. Sterling, where are you, Sterling? Back up to 161. The U.S. dollar was really quite weak in here today. And precious metals soared. Gold bullion got up to a new all-time high in U.S. dollars. It reached a high today of 1587, almost 1588. So let's say 1588, and is settled here now in after-hours trading at 1581.40. So that's up 1373. And platinum up 21, silver romped up $2.50, palladium up 10. Industrial metals were higher, I think, with the exception of lead. Copper didn't do much though. 439.25 is the last. Came off the highs. Crude oil, Brent around 118 and change. The grain and bean complex soared. We've got wheat, I suppose. Yes, wheat definitely did best, up 42 cents to 7.14. We had corn limit up briefly at one stage, but then closed 8 cents off that at up 21.75. Similar gains for soybeans. And most of the agricultural commodities were higher here today. Okay, so what's going on overall? Well, Bernanke's Humphrey Hawkins testimony, or day one of the Humphrey Hawkins testimony, really started the ball rolling here. Now, people have been talking about QE3. Not Bernanke as such, but he did come out and say fairly early on that he was ready to provide additional stimulus if the economy needed it, that the unemployment figures were frustrating, was progressing slowly, as was the economic recovery. So willing to do more, and then he did comment, presumably in answer to a question, that if inflationary pressures pushed up, that he would be willing to raise interest rates in that event, but repeated his comments about the commodity prices being temporary. Well, the only trouble with that is that they're not temporary, and it's a secular bull market, and I suspect that even Mr. Bernanke, I don't mean to sound rude on that, but it's not his job to be a commodity specialist, but they're not temporary. Now, he might get right on the, or might be right about the Rate of inflation easing off on an annualized basis because we had the first peak in the commodity index this year in March. And so, that washes out after March next year. But prices are still going to be high, and consumers are certainly going to feel it. And they may well be higher still. So, I've said it before on a number of occasions. This is a stagflation environment here right now. Now, stock markets again soared on all this talk of QE3 on the financial news channels. People are regarding it as a given, and they feel that that's really going to be good news for equities, more liquidity sloshing around. So it fed through to all the markets here today. I don't know if Bernanke will try to dampen that down tomorrow. We will see. But I think as the day wore on, people had a second thought or second thoughts on this is that short-term interest rates are certainly going to stay lower. That doesn't guarantee that the Fed's going to go rushing into QE3, and I think Bernanke would dearly love to be able to avoid that. So I think if he gets painted into a corner, then he comes out with the QE3. That's my guess on this. But also, there are other reality checks in here, in that the event that turned markets around from being experiencing panicking sell-off yesterday morning to rebounding was when the Italian bonds, which had soared from 5% to over to 6% in 5 days, and most of that advance on Monday and Tuesday of this week, when they turned around and fell back, and other bonds moved back with them, with the exception of the Irish yields. Now, Ireland's a lot smaller than Italy or Spain, so it won't have the same impact overall. And the yields aren't soaring, but they're moving steadily higher. I think it's at least 5 or 6 days on the trot that they have moved into new high ground. And then we had that downgrade by Moody's of the Irish debt yesterday. So that hasn't entirely gone away, but we've seen a little bit of respite clearly in the selling pressure, and a number of those indices bounced sharply from yesterday's lows with some upside follow-through here today. The most important ones, they're all important, but the most important ones, take the S&P, take the NASDAQ, they're still holding on to more than half of their gains, particularly the NASDAQ, from the June reaction lows. And I've often mentioned those June reaction lows as being the support levels to watch here in the short to medium term. China and India are also still above those levels. India is going to have to contend with this bomb blast, or these bomb blasts. I think there were three of them in Mumbai, which have killed at least 21 people and injured 170, according to the last news item. Other factors here: crude oil prices too high. That Brent back up over 118, and it's pressing against a little bit of lateral resistance here. I also noticed the gasoline price in the USA is pushing back up, and this food price inflation here, these grains and beans have really moved up quite sharply. And I think rough rice might, which was strong yesterday, and I posted that chart, and I think it might have been limit up here today. So breaking up out of that big long trading range that I illustrated yesterday, and you can see on the charts. That is a concern. And where's the good news on the inflation front? Well, it's hard to find because the except if you say, well, there isn't much wage inflation. Well, there is in the growth economies. Let's start with that. There isn't much wage inflation in the West. That is certainly true because of high unemployment and weak GDP growth. But there's plenty of commodity price inflation, and I think it's going to continue. Let's take China, for instance. Now, China has said that at least 20% of its inflation currently, which is 6.7%, 20% of its inflation is coming from pork prices. Well, they need to get herds up, don't they? And that's something that really only China can do for itself, and they'll move heaven and earth, as they say, to achieve that. And achieve it they will, but one of the things they will have to do to achieve that is to import more corn, because China lacks the sufficiently wet soil to grow the amount of corn that they actually require. So corn can't be grown all over the world, so they try to buy that corn from the U.S., and the U.S. already has extremely low reserves. Ethanol demand for corn is going up steadily. Madness, in my view. And China, not only do they need the corn for the hogs, but they also need it for chicken feed as well. And so that'll be the two main meat sources for the Chinese, pork and chicken. So they're going to import a whole lot more corn, as much as they can get their hands on, to try to get that food price inflation down by getting their herds and flocks up. Meanwhile, weather over the last year and a half has played havoc with growing conditions. So this is not a good situation here at all. And this is the type of environment that I'm afraid we're going to have to deal with, possibly for quite some time. It really requires a recession such as we saw in 2008. That was a devastating recession in most of the West. It was just a growth slowdown for the Chinas and Indias. And why did I use the plural? There's only one of each, but you get the point here. And so it wasn't a global recession, unless you count a growth recession being a slower rate of growth as part of that recession. But the point is that it takes a sharp economic contraction to interrupt that commodity supercycle. But all it does is interrupt it. And then the pressure is back to the upside. And we're getting that because the growth economies led by China are voracious consumers of all commodities. And as their living standards go up, they increase their intake of foods and want more of a high protein diet, just like we've enjoyed in the West for such a long period of time. And all along, and these commodities become more expensive to produce, and that certainly includes mining. There's a strain on mining supplies. Salaries go up. Equipment, heavy mining equipment costs go up. Transport costs go up. So it costs more to get these things out of the ground from hard to extract and refine minerals to agricultural crops. And that adds to the commodity inflation pressures. And that's what we get in the super cycle. So we get some respite, as I say, when growth slows, but then prices pick up again, and that causes problems. You get a long respite if you have a sharp recession. If you just get a slowdown, such as we saw or are seeing currently, you get brief respite, and then the pressures start to build again. Well, that will frighten stock markets in the not too distant future. But then stock markets also like the talk of QE3 and low interest rates remaining, and most countries around the world do have negative interest rates, in other words, beneath the rate of inflation, and that's a tailwind for equities, which get buffeted by the headwind coming from commodity prices. And also monetary tightening in countries where we have monetary tightening, but we don't have any severe monetary tightening because we still have negative interest rates, as I mentioned a moment ago. So that's the trade-off here overall. But where does it actually leave us? Well, China's growth figures were extremely good. On the latest figures coming out today, 9.5%. Now, you and I, for our sins, well, I'll just say my sins. For my sins, you're blameless, I'm sure. But for my sins, I've seen an awful lot of reports on China talking about a crash, a hard landing, and so on. Well, here we are, 9.5% growth. Sure, there are all kinds of problems in China, just as there are in any fast-growing economy. Inequities, corruption, all kinds of bottlenecks, too much speculation, inflation, all kinds of problems. But if we ask the question, well, I'll ask the question, which Western government would not like to swap its economic problems for China's economic problems? Well, it's a rhetorical question. And I can think of maybe three or four that might want to think about it before swapping their problems for China's problems. But they all do, those three or four economies do extremely well by exporting things to China, things that China needs. And that's why that's such a hot investment area. And why it's right up there among the forefront of the Fuller Money secular investment themes. Buy the things that China needs to import, and buy the companies that need to, or that China is importing from. Buy the companies that are exporting things to China. And that's where the ASEAN sector of stock markets does so well, because they supply lots of commodities to China, at least Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Thailand do. And they're also catching a lot of the simpler assembly and small manufacturing that China's now moving away from. And the whole region is purring along with really strong growth. And then the resources providers, exporters, commodity exporting countries around the world are doing very well, because they are supplying goods to not only China, but this vast region in terms of both landmass and population, includes India. So that's pretty much the story, but we can forget sweet spots, we can forget Goldilocks, as in not too hot or not too cold, because we've got heat coming from the commodities and a bit of a chill here with some of the West's economic problems. And that's the world that you and I inhabit, and you and I can only deal with the realities that the markets provide here. So expect more rock and roll. What we need to remember is that we shouldn't be paying up for things. We should be trying to buy the Fuller Money themes and other themes that you like on setbacks. And that includes, of course, the Western multinationals that are benefiting from their global sales, and then they're consolidating those sales earnings in soft currencies. If you want hard currencies, you go to Asia and you go to the resources producers. We don't look to the US dollar or sterling or the euro in terms of hard currency. And we have to accept the fact that we will get periodic shocks. The one that has roiled markets the most this week, the European sovereign debt problems, and that's just not going to go away. And it'll come back, and then there's a pause, a little bit of temporary respite, and more reassurances, and the problems kick down the road, to coin a phrase, and they ponder and talk and extend and so on, but the problem's still there. And a lot of those problems in the United States are still there. The banks still hold toxic assets on their balance sheets. The mortgage situation's in an absolute mess. The unemployment situation is in a mess. Corporate debt, I beg your pardon, consumer debt has been coming down, but it needs to come down further. That would be a healthy transformation, but it all takes time. It takes lots of time. It takes lots of time to recover from a credit crisis recession, as I've mentioned before. And then it's a very competitive world out there. So these Western problems, they can't be resolved quickly. So that's another component. Now, that doesn't mean that we cash up and head for the hills, far from it. But it means, to repeat myself, that we don't want to pay up. We want to buy things following setbacks. It is a strong justification for having a commodity component led by precious metals in one's portfolio. Having fat-fingered my way out of silver last week, I bought back here today. Also bought a little bit of platinum. I was reluctant to buy gold on another consecutive day to the upside, but I don't expect to be out of that long for long. And about those precious metals, because I've been talking about this is historically a period of seasonal underperformance. Are we going to get new highs for the others as well, as we saw with gold today? Well, definitely over the medium term. Over the short term, I would not be surprised if we don't see a little bit more choppy ranging activity. But setbacks are buying opportunities in that sector. And commodity stocks are beginning to benefit. We've gold shares have surged in here in the last couple of days. We've had some good research on gold shares here recently, and they, that thing from on that PowerPoint from BlackRock showing that they were historically cheap relative to bullion. And they've surged in the last couple of days, 2, 3 days, and I think we'll go higher overall. So there are plenty of opportunities out there, but one's going to need to remain relatively robust emotionally in this environment. I mean, good heavens! I was thinking yesterday. Well, it was only Tuesday, and I've had more than enough excitement for the week. More excitement in here today. I say that with a smile and a chuckle here, but never a dull moment, eh? Well, let's see what tomorrow brings. Meanwhile, all the best to all of you.